So, I croaked, ignoring her wince at my raspy voice. You're worried that your dead husband is haunting you when you fuck other men? I inhaled a long drag of the cigarette, then took care to blow the smoke just far enough from her face to avoid being rude. She didn't flinch, which meant she thought I had a lot to offer. Pretty little thing she was. Nearly 30 years old, though I'd estimate the age of her modified chest to be about 3. Her good looks stemmed mainly from the fact that she'd clearly avoided a lifetime of hard work. I probably would have been equally attractive 25 years ago had my twin passions been vanity and stupidity. This gal right here was taken care of. Her expression glazed for a moment, and I noticed. No, she offered timidly. It's nothing like that. She looked up at me with wide eyes that had been conditioned to elicit sympathy, and I noticed. It's just, she then bit her lip. It's just that Raymond's been gone a month, but I don't think that he's gone, you know. I want to know if I should put him behind me, or... She then shed a tear. It started out small. His favorite sweater would be hanging in the closet, but the next morning, it was lying on the bedroom floor. Not a big deal, you know. She looked around conspiratorially, despite the fact that no one was in the brightly lit sun porch besides the two of us. As if sensing my thought, Sophocles rubbed up against my skirt. I reached down and scratched his ear without turning away from my client, and she stared right back up at me, looking over the swirling vapor dancing from the teapot spout. But then, she breathed, flushing slightly pink. I would be, in an intimate moment? With yourself or with a partner? I asked bluntly. Her pink face quickly turned crimson. The first one. I'd hear a sudden banging on my bedroom door. It would go away whenever I stopped. What makes you think it's your dead husband? I pressed her, crushing my cigarette and lighting a new one. She gazed down at the table. Well, he would always interrupt me, even if it wasn't about anything naughty. She looked up at me in desperation. It just feels like him. Does that make any sense? But the worst thing was last night. That's what made me decide that it was time to talk with a professional. God, her little pauses and cute blushing were so irritating. I really wanted to slap the shit out of her. Explain, I ordered before taking in the first drag. A long pull of the cigarette really makes people like her worth it. What was her name? Cindy? She looks like a Cindy. But the Cindys of the world always scatter from my mind for just a few seconds during that first sensual puff. In those moments, I feel so goddamn capable. Last night, I coughed, reality set back in. Listen, Cindy, it's Ann Samantha. You must have jilled off thousands of times in your life. I'm sorry, jilled? Well, are you a jack from the waist down? She laid a dainty little hand right on her mouth. Oh, I'm all Jill, I suppose. I grunted. So what's so different about jilling off now? Her eyes got wide again, but I had learned long ago to suppress the slap urge. When I'm all alone in bed, I hear breathing. But it's only when I'm alone. It's unmistakable. Well, how hard are you working? I asked pointedly. And she dropped the hand from her face. The breathing is coming from the other side of the room. I gave her an unblinking fixed stare, and she returned it. I finally turned away when a lump of ash fell from my cigarette onto the table. Here, I offered, pouring a cup of tea from the pot. I rested my hand on the painted grapefruit and lavender design to hold it steady. Drink this. She took it obediently, blew on it, and then took a sip and winced. Too hot? I asked sharply. No, it's too bitter, she responded. Well, that's too bad. Drink the whole cup if you want to see what's on the other side. She sipped as I spoke. You've told me that Raymond's been gone a month. You're brokenhearted, but you can't move on if he's still here. The shock was terrible, wasn't it? A hit and run while he was crossing the street right in front of your own home. The worst moments of your life were sprinting through the house, knowing what was outside before you even saw it. The hope was the worst, because you knew that your husband's broken body would be lying in the street. But the smallest part of you hoped that it wasn't true, and that hope made it hurt so much more. You then found him in a gory heap just beyond your front yard, and the future you'd imagined drained away like blood through your fingers. And it was in that exact moment, kneeling in the middle of the street at 7:13 p.m., that you realized your life had been permanently changed to a different path of someone else's choosing. I then took an aggressive puff off the cigarette and pressed forward. The sun set while you held his already cooling hand, and you realized that this would be the first sunset you'd spend knowing he was dead, and that you would end every day with this thought on your mind from now on. She blanched at that. I never told you that it was a sunset. I never even said it was a car accident.
I narrowed my eyes at her. The guilt was more than you expected, because part of you had actually cared about Raymond. Yes, he was old and boring. My God, you would never let him forget it, but he'd felt just so fragile when you crushed his spine with a car that the anger didn't seem to make sense in the moment. I blew smoke through my nostrils. He knew it was you, Cindy. You pulled the car into the driveway and rinsed off the blood so fast that no one even thought to check for evidence, but he knew. And as he lay dying, unable to speak through shattered lungs, he stared at you without hate, malice, or vengeance. It was simple confusion. Raymond never considered that you did it for the cash. His dying thought was wondering how he'd somehow been a bad husband, and he felt guilty for not knowing why. Her eyes were shimmering with tears that I believed were genuine, but I didn't give a shit. Her cup of tea was empty. I was so careful, she whispered in a pitch that was just below the only dogs can hear it threshold. I rolled my eyes. No, you weren't, sweetie. People are just stupid, and that's the only reason you've gotten away with everything so far. Really, putting $619,138 in cash in a briefcase is just asking for trouble. Her jaw hung in shock. How could you have known that? I blew one last long stream of smoke from the cigarette. If I were in your shoes, sweetie, I'd be much more worried about how much poisonous oleander you just had with your tea. She slammed her hands on the table and grabbed the edges so hard that the empty cup rattled in its saucer. What did you do to me? I pulled the cigarette butt from my lips and quashed it in her empty cup. Make peace with whatever god or devil awaits your heart, I answered flatly. Then I turned to look across the sun porch at the ghost only I could see. Raymond was a disgusting mess. His shattered spine had no hope of holding his torso rigid, so every limb flopped at unholy angles. A fountain of black blood oozed from his white lips and nose. His intestines protruded from his stomach like ground beef squeezed between grimy fingers, and the coils hung to the ground like sausage links. He stared at his young widow, or I should say, the one eye that hadn't popped to jelly was staring. I really think that Cindy would have been unnerved if she'd known he was there. Instead, she focused on me. How long? When will it start? She asked in utter petrification. In just a second, sweetie, I quipped casually, lighting up another cigarette. Raymond grunted. He wasn't much for talking, what with the whole lolling tongue dangling impotently where his missing jaw should have been. Oh, and one last thing, sugar. I leaned forward and gently rested my palms on the tabletop. Raymond wants to let you know that dying really, really hurts. She froze, behind her, despite a lacking mouth. I could swear that Raymond was smiling. The convulsing started then, but it didn't stop for a long time. Do you have any idea how far mouth foam can spray when a dying woman just won't stop thrashing? I almost felt bad for her when I realized how hard she was trying to cry. That's a really difficult task, though, when your throat is closing up. That's when Raymond sauntered over to her jittering body, knelt down, and gently grazed his dead fingertips across her cheek. He looked passionately into her eyes, and for just a moment, I think she looked back. And then she was gone. The ghost corpse took in the sight of a few moments before I interrupted him with a forced clearing of my throat. Ahem. Then he glanced up at me with his lone, functioning eye. It was damp. I do appreciate your clear instructions on how to locate the briefcase. If everything is as promised, the bill will be settled. He grunted and waved his limp, floppy arm at the body of his dead wife. Her? I'll leave her in the backyard of your house. Well, I stuck an oleander plant into the garden during one of my nightly visits. They're not uncommon here in Alabama, and they will explain her accidental death nicely. I wrinkled my nose. And I have to say, I'll be grateful to stop sneaking into your house each night to spook this murderous little bitch. Her moans made me gag, and I hate crawling through windows. I'm not 50 anymore, you know. I took in a deep breath of nicotine-laced air. He grunted again, dangling his unresponsive arm above the dead woman once more. Hmm? I asked in genuine curiosity as I approached the corpse. Something else? He shook more eagerly, spraying a fine mist of ghost blood onto the woman's purple face. Oh my. I bent down and pried a ring from the woman's rubbery hand. There must be 2 dozen diamonds on this. I sang. Then I slipped it onto my middle finger. It fit perfectly. Thank you very much. Yes, I do accept tips for a job well done, you gentlemen, you. This time, I know Raymond was smiling. And I was too. My name is Patricia Barnes, and I'm a hitman for ghosts that only I can see. I flopped the woman's dead body unceremoniously onto the ground and lit a cigarette to catch my breath. Well, Cindy, I muttered through a delightful stream of smoke. I hope those aftermarket titties were worth it, because they did not make carrying you any easier. Cindy, or was it Madison? I don't keep close track of these things. Simply stared out into the cobalt blue sky in silent repose. If she'd had anything to say, the dried foam on her lips would have been gurgling by now. I plopped myself down on an outdoor chair and took in the surroundings. Madison's backyard was a destination unto itself. Dogwood flowers mingled freely with magnolias, and stately oak trees flanked the edges of a yard dotted with willows. I breathed in the moment while the bugs sang at full force. Truly one of the finest yards in Alabama, Madison, I offered, glancing in contempt at the tongue lolling out of her mouth. I've laid you to rest right next to the beautiful oleanders that I used to poison your tea. I pinched the butt and slapped the cigarette into my pocket to avoid leaving any traceable evidence before forcing my creaking bones out of the chair. Lifting corpses just leaves my joints exhausted afterwards. My hips screamed in protest, reminding me that they couldn't work like the pistons they had been back in the 70s. With effort, I stepped over her body and headed for the gate, wondering just how much she would rot in the southern sun before the neighbors complained about the smell. Monday mornings are really wearing on me, more than they once did. I was staring at a topless man when the dead boy walked into my sun porch. And he wasn't just any topless man. He looked like that actor from the underwater movie. My guess is that God had given him a chest at the expense of a brain, because he was walking around in a perpetual daze, clearly unaware that he was dead. He didn't seem to need any help, so I didn't intervene. I was just happy to watch. Please, miss, I need your help. I looked over the edge of my iced tea and stared down at the boy. He was a sight. No more than 10 years old, but possessing the eyes of a war veteran. Ashen gray skin with livid purple bruises around his neck. I took less than a respectable gulp from the sweet tea. The topless man had flustered me, and I wanted to cool down enough to at least give the appearance of presentability to the child. I popped the cigarette back into my mouth. If you are here to inquire about my professional services, young man, please understand that compensation needs to be arranged before any services are rendered. He looked at me with innocent confusion. He was a cute kid, honest to God, and cute kids annoy me, especially dead ones. He clearly didn't understand me, so I went for a more direct approach. How are you going to pay me, kid? I blew a waft of smoke that passed right through his dead face and swirled out of the back of his skull. Well, I don't have any money, he said flatly. I'm just a kid, and I think I'm dead. Well, then we have no business to conduct. I looked up in disappointment to find that the topless ghost had wandered off. I sighed. Sophocles leapt into my lap and started purring. I looked down to scratch behind his ear when I noticed the boy still in my field of vision. I narrowed my eyes at him. Please, ma'am, I hear that you can help people after they die. He called me ma'am instead of miss, or someone's grandma, so he was starting to win me over. I hate it when people win me over. I sighed again. Look, kid, you can't ask me to compromise my prices when you're compromising your morals. I'm running a respectable business here. If you want someone killed, you need to give me cash. But he looked confused. I don't want anyone killed. I just want my sister to be alive. I made no attempts to hide my eye roll. I get this a lot, kid. Okay, sorry, but I can't make anyone non-dead. Nobody can. I quashed my spent cigarette, lit another, and took a deep breath. What has been done cannot be undone. He shook his head. No, that's not it. My sister's alive now. He quivered and looked like he was about to cry. But she might not be for much longer. I was really beginning to soften. All right, kid, well, I'm not a doctor. I can't help the living any more than they can help themselves. He shook his head again in urgency. The purple bruises on his neck gave me the heebie-jeebies. No doctor can save her, though, because they don't know where she is. But even doctors won't be able to make her better if she's there much longer. I slowly lowered the cigarette and looked the kid up and down once more. A man took us while we were walking to school. He locked us in his basement. I tried to make Anna feel better because I'm 3 years older, but I was crying too. He wiped his eye and I was determined not to show that I had the same need. I promised that I would find a way out of the basement for her, and I looked real hard. We weren't there but a day when the man came downstairs again and got awfully mad. I tried to protect Anna, but then I realized it was me he was after. I fought back as hard as I could, but he was very strong. He strangled me and it hurt really bad, more than I thought a body could hurt. And I realized that he was going to make Anna suffer the same way. And then it felt like I was floating. He stopped talking and struggled to compose himself. Anna couldn't hear me or see me after that, no matter how much I tried to talk to her. And then I realized I could walk right through the door. He stepped closer and gave me these terrible doe-like eyes that made me want to smack him and then have a good cry. I saw where he keeps his keys. I'm the only one who knows where Anna is, and you're the only one who can help me. Now, I'm sorry I don't have any money, but will you help us? I sighed. This is why I hate kids. It was pitch black outside as I helped Sophocles into the pet door of the kidnapper's house. How will your cat know to bring the keys back to you? The boy asked in wide-eyed horror. I cackled quietly. You think he's just a cat, huh? He responded with a shocked silence that lasted until the black feline shadow popped back out of the pet door, dropping the keys from his mouth into my hands and purred loudly. Thank God we can get through the door, I muttered, looking up at the ivy-colored trellis. It's been many years since I've been confident in my prowess at negotiating second-floor windows. though you'd be surprised what a body can do when motivated by the promises of a conjugal visit. What? The boy asked innocently. I said you should always eat your vegetables. Now, what makes you so sure that this man isn't at home right now? The boy fidgeted. I lied. He might be in there. I didn't think you'd come rescue my sister if it were too dangerous. One of the worst things about dead people is that you can't smack them. Everyone knows someone who needs a good smack, and that need is only compounded by the fact that societal expectations preclude us from delivering a much-needed antidote to the slap-deprived. I sighed and rubbed my temples. Okay, I'm armed with a cigarette lighter and a cat against a violent criminal. Good plan, kid. He looked at me like he was going to cry. Again. And that's how I found myself sneaking through the man's creepy house. It certainly looked like the lair of a child kidnapper. Every light was out, and of course I didn't risk turning any on. The kitchen was alive with the buzzing of unseen flies, which were no doubt feasting on whatever unholy concoction of decomposing foodstuffs was currently assaulting my nose. If the smell was any indication, the man was an aficionado of marinated toe jam, cat food, and aged cream. I crept through the darkened kitchen and into the silent living room. The raw emptiness of that space was somehow worse. The house felt devoid of humanity, as though no happy person had ever touched these walls. The fact I was being guided by a ghost did not come for me in any way. Nor did the knowledge that the criminal who resided here might show up at any second. Nevertheless, I clawed my way along the floor of the disgusting man's abode in search of the basement door. My hand found cold metal, and I smiled grimly. I flicked the cigarette lighter just long enough to fit the key into the door. It opened with a satisfying click. The rough-hewn steps told me that this basement was an amateur addition to the house, likely designed to keep prying eyes away from unsavory secrets. I blew out the lighter and descended into darkness. I could feel the temperature drop significantly with every step. I'd expected a full staircase of around 19 steps, but was off by about 13. I came to rest on a dirt floor that was far too close to the ceiling. Claustrophobia crept around the edges of my brain. Keep going, came the voice of the ghost behind me. I moved forward, my head and neck brushing up against the ceiling. The air was thick and musty. Stop. My breath hitched. Can you find her and tell me if she's alive? He whispered through tears. I didn't really want to be in this creepy man's house. I didn't want to be in the basement of said house. And I really didn't want to wave my arms around in the dark to search for a corpse. A cigarette, though. That would hit the spot. I was just thinking about how nice that would be when I felt the girl's arm. My body temperature dropped as every hair on my neck rose. Damn it, girl, wake up, I spat in a raspy whisper. Move now, you hear? I jumped as the boy spoke. We found a flashlight on the floor before I died. My mind raced. I had to try to remain discreet as possible, but light was going to be a necessity if I had to haul this girl out of here. I reached around on the floor, found the flashlight, and clicked it on. I fell on my ass as the beam illuminated a face. The girl was staring, unblinking, right at me. And I forgot to breathe. She did not look good. I gasped, then controlling my breathing. Hey, kid, I offered tentatively as I crept toward her. Wake up. We need to be leaving right now. My words reverberated oddly in the dilapidated basement. I touched her shoulder and shook it. The girl's skin yielded disgustingly to my touch, but her body was grotesquely stiff. The movement caused a brief, unnatural escape of gases through her open mouth. Her eyes were like glass, and mine were wet. No. No, kid, I whispered, moving closer while the flashlight's beam bounced erratically about the room. Don't do this, please. I found Anna. The boy said from behind me, causing me to jump. I turned around to see him standing at the top of the stairs. She's like me now. You were too late. I stopped hiding my tears, I'm sorry. Let me talk to her. Where is she? The boy didn't move. He seemed very old. You didn't save her, he explained simply. Why? I searched for words and found none. Let me speak to her, please. I looked wildly around for answers that I couldn't find. I briefly noticed the door to what looked like an underground bomb shelter, which was creepy enough in its own right. But I didn't have time to process what I was seeing. He didn't move. You weren't there for, he continued in this matter-of-fact way. So she doesn't want to ever see you again. I'm so sorry for everything, William. Who's William? He asked innocently. I wiped my eyes. I didn't mean to say that, but please tell your sister that I want to talk with her to make things all right. He sighed, and it was so much heavier than a child's sigh should ever be. No, it won't. The man hurt her so much worse than he hurt me, and things will never be all right. Anna said she wanted to grow up and be a veterinarian to help all the sick animals. Not get cold in the ground while the world slowly forgets she ever lived. Part of me broke right then. I was surprised. By that time in my life, I had figured all the tiny pieces that were left of me had been too small for cracking. But I suppose the world isn't above grinding even the tiniest pieces into the finest of dust. I looked up again to see that he had climbed to the top of the stairs. He was barely visible in my flashlight. Then a tiny girl's arm reached from beyond the door and took his hand in hers. She pulled him away and he disappeared. I remember that he was smiling. That's the sort of thing that stands out when you see someone for the very last time. A warm, furry force suddenly pushed against me in the darkness. I reached out and scratched esophagus behind the ears. I dried my eyes again. You're right. It's time to stand up. I got achingly to my feet and took a deep breath. Because I'm not done here. Somewhere in this house is a man who deserves something far more sinister than a poisonous oleander in his tea. And I loved getting into trouble. I was covered in more tears and snot than I'd like to admit, because even I feel sensitive when dead children get up and walk away. The cigarettes in my pocket were softly calling my name, so I pulled one out and flicked the lighter. It wouldn't catch. The dancing light was just enough to illuminate a vivid crimson sheen on my fingertips that extended its damp reach to my cancer stick. I couldn't smoke because the cigarette was covered in children's blood, and now I was vengeful and irritable. That's when I decided to have a little meeting with the owner of this rancid shithole. Looking around the room, I got a feel for the shape of the path in front of me, and then I flicked out the light. I softly crept across the cool earth, then climbed the darkened steps back up to the house above. The trapdoor creaked over my head as I lifted it and emerged into the pungent room. Soft fur brushed against my shins. I smiled. Let's see if there are any garden shears in the backyard, Sophocles, I responded to the cat below me. We need to readjust a certain gentleman's interpretation of manhood. He's too lazy for garden tools, but you'll find an axe out by the shed, came a woman's voice from behind me. And this is why I yearned for brown underwear in my first few years on the job. I slowly turned around to face the person standing behind me in the dark. Moonlight streamed through the window just well enough to light up her face. Or more accurately, what was left of her face. The top left chunk of the woman's head was split wide open. White and gray tendrils dazzled in the moonlight as I looked deep into her shattered skull. One eyeball hung loosely from its optic nerve. It jiggled on her cheek as she spoke. I sighed. Looks like you've had a rough go around, honey. But you wouldn't believe the day I've had. Any chance you know where I'd find a smoke? She bore into me with her one good eye for several seconds as I grew more impatient. The only smoke he has on hand is a little bit of meth, if that's what you're into. I scowled. Look, honey, I'm really on edge right now. I'm sure the cops have found the last woman I killed by this point, I just failed the dead girl. There has been an appalling lack of naked man ghosts as of late, and my cigarettes have been destroyed by all the blood. Are you gonna tell me more about this axe, or should I just burn the fucking house down? I really, really didn't want to go deeper into the house, but I learned long ago that you have to embrace swarms of flies when you're dealing with shit. Are you sure you want to wake him? The ghost woman asked nervously as she stood by the door. He might react poorly. I grabbed the knob. Listen, Mindy. I've gone 20 minutes without a smoke, and this waste of skin is the reason. I threw open the door. I'm gonna start acting poorly. The smell of body odor and semen attacked my nose with such aggression that I had to fight against my gag reflex. Through the tears in my eyes, I could see the form of a man lying on a stained mattress set, haphazardly in the middle of a disheveled room. The greasy strands of thinning gray hair covered an unshaved face. And then he farted. My name isn't Mindy, the ghost whispered. I dated him for 19 years. Since I was 13, and he shot me in the face. Please be careful. I strode quickly across the nasty room and kicked him in the head. He woke with a snort. Who the fuck are you? He shouted in hazy bewilderment. I'm a lady with standards, which will understandably cause you confusion, and you can call me ma'am. Decorum says you should put on your pants in my presence, but the visual evidence makes it clear that you have nothing worth covering. Now stand up, young man. Instead, he reached into a pile of soiled underwear that was festering by his head and pulled out an extraordinarily large pistol. He pointed it at my face and smiled. I stared at the length of the gun's barrel. Makes sense, I offered coolly, but he didn't get it. I don't know what you're doing in my bedroom because I don't fuck old meat, he slurred as he got to his wobbly feet. The man kept the gun aimed at my head, so I didn't move. I'm here to deliver a message from Mindy. He stepped closer to me. My name is Starla, she interjected. I closed my eyes and sighed. Of course it was. Starla. I mean, Starla, I'm here to talk to you about the girlfriend you murdered. Blinding white angry pain erupted across my head as I was swirling until I hit the floor. Copper and anguish filled my mouth. I grabbed my face and felt my teeth. Good. None had been knocked loose in his pistol whip. I then spat blood on the floor, and then I stood and faced him. His eyes rolled wild in confusion. You've never seen a woman stand up after hitting her, have you? I asked as I wiped my sleeve against my lip to clean the blood. I panted. Fuck, my face hurt. Get up to speed quick, because we have to talk about how Starla told me that you buried her beneath the house. You thought that no one would find out, but I can see more than you'll ever imagine. My world spun with residual dizziness, and I adjusted my footing for balance. What? He asked with all the elegance of a gorilla scratching its ass. He used to tell me that I was the only one who made him feel less ashamed, the woman whispered from the corner. I could tell that she was crying. I'll need something a little more specific, I explained as I spat more blood on the floor, something only you would know. The look on his face told me that he didn't understand why I was talking to someone he couldn't see, which only increased his anger. She sniffed. Well, he would ask me to tie his, you know, stuff up with string before he got with me. You mean stuff like that? For fuck's sake, couldn't he have remembered her favorite flower? No, of course not. I cleared my throat. I can see ghosts, jackass. Your dead girlfriend here is telling me that your little pecker only got up when she tied you up with a bow. Is that right, champ? His eyes grew wide. How the fuck do you know any of that shit? Are you a witch? He teetered on Patsy legs. Yeah, we'll go with that. I'm a witch, and I'm here to tell you a secret. He stared at me with fear, because he was unable to process respect. The fish was on the line. Starla knows that you're the best thing that ever happened to her, I explained softly. No, I don't, she interrupted. I hated him. He used to watch Scooby-Doo sexually. I was just too afraid to leave. She wants you to be safe, I continued in a nurturing tone. Everyone's in danger. We're about to be attacked by foreigners. But you can be spared if you're with her. His eyes grew wide. The fish was reeling in. She's buried in the basement, but Starla knows you love her. You have a bomb shelter down there, don't you? Underneath the house, far away from everything bad, you can be safe. His eyes danced. We're being attacked. When? I narrowed my gaze at him. Right now. He pushed me aside and ran out of the room. Fish, meat barrel. The axe weighed heavily in my hands as I descended the staircase into the primitive basement for the second time that night. The smell of decaying flesh was clear this time, but that only furthered my resolve. I flicked on the light just long enough to find the flashlight, but I couldn't ignore the dead grill on the mattress as I bent down. I whispered delicately, "I'm so sorry." I turned on the flashlight and swiveled it around the room. It shined through the dead woman standing next to me and lit up the structure behind her. Deep tracks were carved in the fresh dirt below, the heavy door of the bomb shelter, revealing that it had been forced open shortly before I'd climbed into the basement. It was currently closed, and the room was empty aside from me, the ghost, and Sophocles. The fish was in the frying pan, and I had one hell of an appetite. I walked resolutely to the door and rested my hand on the wheel that had to be spun to open it. It was locked tight, and I smiled. Then I raised the axe high above my head, turned it around so that the sharp end was facing behind me, and swung. The first crash had little effect. The second one dented the wheel, but the 200th swing knocked the damn thing clean off and into the dirt. I collapsed to the ground and leaned against the door, panting for air. "You're sure," I gasped, "that he has no way of communicating with the outside world and no way of opening the door now that the handle is broken." Mindy or Starla or whoever she was nodded slowly. "He used to lock me in there for days at a time," she said shakily. "No one on the outside can hear the screams." She sighed. "Trust me, the man's easy to predict. I told you he wouldn't react to the pounding because he believed you were trying to get access to the safety of the shelter." She wiped her good eye. The other one swung on its nerve. "He showed me every detail of the door's handle to prove how easily he could seal me in permanently. There's no way he's getting out." "Good. Now how much water does he have?" I heaved. "I'd like to know if he'll die of asphyxiation or thirst." "You know what? Never mind. I like a little mystery in my life, and both endings are happy." I got to my feet and faced the door. "Make peace with whatever god or devil awaits your heart," I offered to him. And then I turned around and pointed the flashlight at the ghost. "But you like a little mystery too, don't you, Mindy?" I asked as I pulled out a cigarette and lit it. Fuck, there's the rush of nicotine I needed. My toes dazzled like I had finally orgasmed after 3 dry days. Now I was ready to face what came next. "You told me that he had no cigarettes, yet I swiped a box right off the rancid floor. I normally demand a higher standard of my smokes, but you know what they say about ports and storms." I blew a delightful stream of smoke into the flashlight's weak beam. "So, what else are you hiding from me?" She blanched, which was an odd thing to see in a person who was missing so much of her face. I didn't. "Nothing. Nothing at all." I shook my head. "Mindy, Mindy, Mindy. This is not my first rodeo, honey." I clenched the cigarette between my teeth. "You've been playing the victimized girlfriend this whole time, which is a half-truth. A vicious one at that." She swallowed and took a step back. I'm not going to lie, it's quite thrilling when ghosts are afraid of me. I'm sure our disgusting friend in the bomb shelter treated you like shit, but it's hard to sympathize when I think of how many children the two of you must have killed together. I bore my eyes into her, looking for any hint that my suspicions were wrong. But I found none. She was a terrible poker player. Now listen to me, you little bitch. You're gonna tell me who actually killed you and who you're working for and why they're coming after me. The bitch missing a chunk of her skull wasn't the first person who tried to kill me. I've been dealing with this shit for a real long time. I suppose that's why I smoke 3 packs a day, but she's the one wandering the earth as a ghost. So what? I like the fact that Ronald Reagan is older, I said with a grin that I couldn't hide. I'd love to slide my fingers through that hair while his head is locked between my thighs. Patricia! Emily scolded as she slapped me painfully across my arm. I maintained a steadfast glare at the dark road before the headlights, but I knew my smile couldn't be hidden. William is in the back seat, Emily continued with an amplified whisper. She was feigning shock, but her voice made it clear that she was also failing in her attempts to stifle a grin. I flashed my eyes to the rearview mirror for half a second, then focused on driving once again. He's asleep, finally. I breathed deeply on the cigarette perched precariously between my lips. I looked over at Emily in the passenger seat next to me. She had pulled the curls from the edge of her perm across her pretty face. It was a nervous habit of hers. Besides, I continued nonchalantly, he's the fucking president. I like to feel a man with power between my legs. I glanced at her again. And you're not in a position to judge me there, Emily. The pale skin of her face flushed crimson with the rapidity of a turning traffic light. Patricia, she shrieked in her fake whisper. That's your brother you're talking about. Yeah? And you're turned on by the fact that more dangerous men want him dead than even Reagan can claim. I get it. It's kind of hot. She grabbed another lock of her hair and pulled it across her face. I laughed. You know what, Emily? I'm glad you're fucking my brother. Just as long as you never tell me the sweaty details. See, I've never had this experience before. Lainey doesn't appreciate what a lovely bitch I can be. I never understood how a sister of mine could be so sour. Like you never understood how a brother of yours was so good in bed. It was my turn to slap her now, and I got a good one in. She shrieked. I can't believe that he wanted an armed escort for us. I laughed. We can hold our own. The world is full of people who need to be slapped, and most of them would piss their pants if they knew how hard we could both hit. She raised an eyebrow at me. William is going to grow up utterly terrified of breaking any rules, isn't he? She chuckled. He'll be terrified of girls until he's 19. 13, let's hope. I sighed. I love him to the moon and back, but I want to get him out of my hair sometimes. And when he's old enough, I don't care if he gets laid or what. It's harder to sneak guys into my room as an adult with a kid home than it was as a teenager with a parent in the next room. Emily laughed out loud. Didn't you share a bedroom with Lainey growing up? I hesitated just long enough to build tension. Fuck one guy while she's still in the room, and your horrified prude of a sister will give you all the privacy you ever asked for. I popped the cigarette out of my mouth and extinguished it in the car's ashtray. She laughed then, deep and guttural, and it spread to me like pollen in the wind. We only notice the greatest moments of our lives in retrospect. At the time, they seemed too natural to be anything but ordinary. And that's what makes them wonderful. The woman flashed suddenly into my vision. There had been no way to see her in the pitch of the night until she was directly in front of the car's headlights. Black, frizzy hair standing wild in every direction. Hands clenched at her sides in the perfect image of anger incarnate. There was no time to break. There was no time to swerve. She looked at me and I knew that she hated me. And I was floating. The car was floating. The car was breaking. And then silence. We crashed to the ground with such violence and noise and breaking that her anger was in the car with us. And we spun, and I tried to hold on to anything, but it was wrong, and there was nothing to grab. We spun, I slipped, the car screeched and shattered, and broke, and I flew. The seatbelt gave way, and I fell. I slid. Fuck, it hurt as the skin of my arm peeled away on the asphalt like sliced cheese, and I screamed. I rolled faster than I thought possible. Then there was cool grass and angry branches, and I was trapped, completely trapped, and the world was still. Get up, Patricia, a voice in my head ordered softly. Get up right now if you don't want to regret every experience for the rest of your life. I hesitated, and then I moved. It burned like Satan's piss was caressing every physical and emotional cut I'd ever felt, but I moved. I freed myself from the bushes, and I stood. My left arm was drenched in blood, but I'd somehow escaped, mostly intact. I realized, dazed, that I must have been thrown horizontally from the spinning car, skidded across the asphalt, and rolled down a grassy embankment, and been lodged deeply in the bushes. My brand new 1986 Chevy coupe was upside down in the middle of the road, front tires still spinning. The roof had been crushed obscenely flat, and I realized that there was no way anyone inside could still be alive. William stood calmly, facing away from me, staring at the rack. I staggered towards him, and he ran. I sprinted after him, leaving the broken car behind. I stumbled awkwardly in my pumps, regretting the short dress that had seemed so perfect an hour or a lifetime ago. He ran super fast for his age, and he started to slip away. William! I screamed. Wait for me, please. I started to slow down. I began to let him go. He stopped running, and I hurried once again to catch up with him. But when I was 5 feet away, instinct told me to stop. William, I sobbed. I wasn't asleep, Mommy, he explained with a chilling level of calm still facing away. I just pretended. Because I know how much you want me to disappear. I ugly cried then. Huge gasping breaths left me desperate for air. No, please, William. My tears burned, and I wondered if I was bleeding from my head. I may never have planned for you, but you're the best thing that's ever happened to me. I need you because it's so hard to have anything so big in my life. I fell to my knees. Please. I never knew how weak I could be until I had a child. Well, why did you leave me alone then? He asked in that same unaffected level of calm. When did I ever leave you? I wailed before another round of sobs. You left me in that car. I'm sorry. I'm sorry for everything, William. I heaved. But I promise I would never leave you. I reached out a trembling hand toward him. He continued to stare away from me, utterly unmoved. It's too late, Mom. At that moment, he began to turn around. You already did. The headlights from the flip car shone like a spotlight behind us, so I was treated to every detail of William's face as he slowly turned around. But that's the thing. William didn't have a face. White bone poked nastily through what remained of William's shredded skin. Only a few angry patches of flesh remained in obscure pockets across his face. His lips jiggled from the edge of his mouth, ready to fall off at the slightest touch. He had no nose, only an empty cavity remained where the asphalt had ground it away from its face. One eye bulged grotesquely from its socket like a ping pong ball. It was far too damaged to track my movement. But the other eye looked down on me with hateful judgment. With so much bone and flesh stripped away, its effect was amplified beyond what I had imagined possible. William coughed. A dozen teeth spilled from his 6-year-old mouth. The
The most horrifying moments of our lives are so intense that it's simply impossible to absorb them all at once. The part of my brain that should have screamed, "Turn away," was numb and unresponsive. Instead, I slowly memorized each exquisite detail of my dead child's broken face as they impressed themselves like red-hot branding irons onto the soft, sizzling gray folds of my brain. They embedded themselves so deeply in my memory that closing my eyes became permanent anguish as I was forced to see the image in every dark space that found me. Then my boy turned away and ran into darkness. I never saw him again. But I would never stop looking. Dazed, I got to my feet. "Get back to the car," the voice said. I obeyed, placing one foot shakily in front of the other while telling myself that this couldn't be happening, that it was surely impossible something this extraordinary could take place while the earth passed so normally beneath my feet. I struggled to make sense of a crash that dared juxtapose the familiar with the horrible as I absorbed the reality that my car was a charnel house for my loved ones. I understood the sight before me in a sudden rush as Emily's red stain of perm revealed itself. Her face had been squeezed into a soft mush that looked more like oatmeal than my sister-in-law. Had it not been for her hair, I never would have recognized the mess as a human being. I fell to my knees and vomited. It was hot bile and the cleanest thing I'd felt since the crash. When I was done, I wiped stray chunks from my lips and looked up. Standing above me, black hair pointing in all directions, was the woman I'd seen in my headlights. An invisible, powerful, angry force grabbed my shoulders. Inexplicably, impossibly, my entire body lifted off the ground, rising until my eyes were level with hers. Since she had lifted an entire car with her mind, however, I probably should have not been surprised that she could make me float. She smiled. I hadn't realized that someone could hate so much and smile at the same time. I felt the spite running through her and into me. I distantly understood that the hate, once blossomed, would always be a part of the deep crevices in my mind. "Tell your brother that he hurt me. He hurt us. He's good at it," she said levelly. My throat closed up and I tried to gasp for air, but some invisible force was woven tightly around my neck. Her smile twitched and the pull on my throat twitched right along with it. Neither he nor I is strong enough to stop the other, so I guess we'll never stop bleeding. My vision was fading, but there was nothing I wanted more in that moment than unconsciousness. "I think you'll get the message," she said. Air attacked my lungs as I crashed to the ground. I took a deep, painful breath and I screamed. The paramedics arrived eventually, but you can't resuscitate human mush. I pushed away anyone who dared to get near my sobbing. And then he arrived. Alistair Delora stepped out of his Mercedes with the crisp efficiency of a man who expected things to happen his way without excuses. I normally hated this aspect of my brother, but in this moment I longed for it with the desperation of a drowning woman. He surely would wake me from a nightmare that needed to be blinked from all existence and memory, because the rest of my life would otherwise be spent dreaming wistfully of how wonderful things had been before this horrible moment. His beady eyes, usually only focused on things worth taking, weren't working right. They were crying. I had never seen him cry before. "Alistair," I screamed as I raced toward him. I flung my arms around his waist, but he didn't catch me. Instead, I slid softly down to his knees, as my hands clasped desperately in search of emotional warmth. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry for everything. I drew in a quivering breath. "Please, please tell me you don't blame me for this. Please tell me it's not my fault, or I'll break." My fingernails dug so deeply into his pant leg that I could feel the fabric tearing. He didn't move. He looked down and I looked up. My brother, the consummate poker player, never showed his emotions, but I could see his face cracking, and I understood that I might be seeing him for the first time. He swallowed. "I'm sorry that I can't tell you what you want to hear, Patricia, but what would you have me do? Blame myself?" he offered softly. Lightheadedness and nausea overcame me in that moment.
I understood that part of my mind had undergone a fissure. It had broken away and followed William into the dark. I could never be whole again, because part of me would suffer forever if I tried, rotting with the gangrenous poison until it consumed my mind. Instead, I simply bade that part of myself farewell. Alistair reached down and caressed my cheek softly. You're looking for closure here, but you're not going to find it. No great achievement was ever possible without the risk of total destruction. The best way for me to show you love, Patricia, is this indispensable advice. Learn to live with brokenness. He really did hurt me, whined the mangled ghost in front of me as she leaked tears from the one eyeball still in its socket. That much is true. And men who beat their partners deserve to drink the juice that spurts from a dog's glands, I agreed coolly. A soft furry warmth pushed up against my leg. I looked down at the ground. Yes, Sophocles, you shit nothing but rainbows. My cat purred loudly from below me. But you, Mindy, you also deserve to die. She gave me a slack-jawed stare. Why do you keep calling me Mindy? Because it rolls off the tongue much more smoothly than rancid stupid bitch. I breathed in the dwindling cigarette, watched the ash burn right to the filter, then tossed it to the floor without checking whether it was extinguished. Mindy wiped her one good eye while the other swayed from its optic nerve. A younger version of me would have suppressed the urge to vomit at this sight, but all I felt was a jonesing for another smoke. How do you figure that, though? She said. Oh, for fuck's sake, Mindy, I spat irritably. When two dead child ghosts walk right fucking past you like those kids that saw you come out of the basement, most people would at least address it in conversation. So clearly you, A, knew exactly why they were dead, B, were so used to dead kids that you didn't even think to pretend that you were shocked, or C, are clearly not above being a whiny bitch when things upset you, but for some reason were completely unmoved by the corpse children. Then, when I accused you of murdering kids, you didn't say no. So here's a bit of advice, Mindy. Whenever someone asks you to kill children, the answer is always a straightforward, curt no. Now, does your dying boyfriend have any cigarettes that aren't covered in rat shit down here? Her eyes glazed over. My name's not Mindy. Oh, you are so fucking lucky that ghosts are unslappable, you bitch. Because you have the slappablest face I've seen in quite some time, I huffed. It had been 2 minutes since my last smoke and I was getting tense. The warm caress of fur ran through my shins once more. Yep, I know that I'm getting worked up, Sophocles. I breathed out slowly and focused on the situation in front of me. Amidst the trash on the floor, I saw a discarded plastic water bottle. I looked into an empty corner of the room and pricked up my ears. The gears turned in my head. Sophocles, have you seen any bleach in this house since we arrived? I know it's a long shot to hope this garbage monster had a need for cleaning supplies in his home. My cat purred loudly. I closed my eyes. Of course, I muttered in disappointment. He used to get high, didn't he? That's the car across the street, Mindy explained as I peeked through the broken living room window. That man in the car killed me. She turned her shattered face to look at me in the moonlight. He asked about you before I even knew who you were. You scared me when we met. She bowed her head. It wasn't my idea to kill the kids. Mervin was the one. I coughed. Your boyfriend's name was Mervin? She looked up at me. What? You're saying I shouldn't have dated him because his name was Mervin? I scowled. No, 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 dumbass. You shouldn't have dated him because he murdered kids. I turned to look at the car. But yes, even if that weren't true, you should not have dated someone named Mervin. That's fucking weird. So you're saying I could have aimed higher when I found out that he was named Mervin? I turned to look at her. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I bent down and scratched Sophocles behind the ear. You better run home. It'd be really awkward to explain why I'm bringing my pet to this thing. He purred once more,
And if a coyote tries to eat you again, go easy on it. They don't know any better. He gave my hand a sandpapery lick and then became one with the darkness. Now, Mindy, I said as I stood up, the man who shot your face off is waiting for me? Yes, she whispered timidly. And he's dangerous. He mentioned something about a woman visiting me after I was dead, and how I had to lead you to him. Mervyn never even knew. I yanked open the door and stepped into the warm, wet Alabama night. The bugs screamed their hymn from all sides as I stepped off the porch. Wait, the ghost screamed from behind me. Don't you understand? He's not safe. Oh, Mindy, I grunted as I walked away without looking back. I don't think either of you realizes that I'm the most dangerous sort of person. I could barely discern the outline of a pudgy man through a tinted car window as I got close. He scrambled as I approached the driver's side door and pounded on the glass. The wind lowered 6 inches, and the barrel of a pistol poked through. It was aimed at my hat. Don't move, came the gruff voice from the other side. I looked at the dark window with the best "are you stupid" expression that I could muster. You came here to capture me and bring me in, correct? There was silence to follow. Then how the fuck do you expect to do that if I don't move? Can I get in the car? Okay, get in the car. He waved the barrel of his pistol. I turned and walked around to the other side, let myself in, plopped down into the seat next to the shadowed man, and closed the door behind me. Now please tell me, Fatty, that you have a fresh box of cigarettes waiting for me. Don't call me Fatty. He sounded more confused than hurt. Okay, Porky, you got some smokes or not? He hesitated for a beat, then held out a box whose label was obscured in the darkness. I snatched it from his hands and pulled out the first one. Always from the front left corner for good luck. I snapped my fingers. Do you have a light? Or am I going to have to smash rocks together like some sort of goddamn barbarian? Watch your mouth. I've killed people for less than that, he shot back menacingly. I plucked a cigarette from my lips. Well, are you going to kill me? Nothing. Do you have a light? A shorter silence followed, and then a flame. I held the cigarette to the fire and danced so lovingly around the tip. It feels so much like a hug. It's warm. It caresses and molds to the edges, and it just makes me feel so loved inside. Now, he said, closing the lighter with a sharp snap, I need you to do exactly as I say. I will not hesitate to pull the trigger. While I'm driving, if you make any attempt to escape, interfere with me, or even move in a slightly suspicious manner, I am going to... Porky, just shut the fuck up and drive. I cut him off. He looked at me and then started the engine. And then he drove. I leaned my head towards the back seat, and I nodded. He looked at me suspiciously, and I smiled. Sit up straight. I looked down at his waist. You a diabetic? I told him. I turned around to stare at the empty back seat. He glanced at me nervously, but said nothing. And we drove like that for some time. Okay, he explained as the car began to slow. We're getting close to the Stardust Motel. And that's where your boss is waiting, I interjected. He's not my boss. He sounded hurt by this. Porky, when someone stays home while the other one picks up the delivery order, a hierarchy has been established. He hit the brakes too hard as he parked, then stepped out of the car and off. Wait here, he ordered before slamming the door behind him. When he returned 2 minutes later, he had his gun drawn. He kept it trained on me as he sat down next to me and talked. You're going to come inside. You will not speak. You will be given instructions that will be followed exactly. If you disobey, try to escape, or don't follow my orders precisely as I command, I have been authorized to kill you, and I will not hesitate to do so. Do you understand? I reached my hand out of the open window and flicked my cigarette onto the dark asphalt. Porky, I promise that you are very easy to read. He scowled and then shoved the pistol into his waistband. Sit still. I'll let you know when it's time to move. Then he plucked his needle from the center console, turned away from me, and pulled insulin into the syringe.
I pulled another cigarette from the box. He plunged the needle into his gut, and I flicked his lighter. He pushed the fluid inside, and I breathed in the heavenly smoke. He yelled and pitched forward, clutching his stomach, writhing back and forth. I exhaled a long, luxurious stream. I looked up at the one-lit motel room in the Stardust. I could just see room number 1913 illuminated in the lamplight. He started vomiting. Fortunately, the chunks were localized to his neck and shirt. Convulsing, he looked up at me in unbridled anguish. I then turned to the back seat, and the ghost looked at me with sunken eyes. For the first time, he smiled. "Well," I said to the dead man, "you get your wish. I have to say that I admire persistence, but my future advice for pursuing women is to give them some space. You've been no more than 3 feet away from me for the past 30 minutes. So where's the mystery?" He grinned sheepishly. Porky started convulsing more violently, and I looked down in disgust as flecks of mouth foam sprayed onto the steering wheel. "But I have to give you credit for ingenuity. Sneaking bleach into his insulin was just diabolical." The ghost cackled gleefully. I tossed the plastic water bottle, now empty of bleach, out the window. "Well, sir, the man who killed you." Porky then emitted a disgusting sound as he vacated his bowels, shuddered once, and then died, with his eyes wide open. "Has now paid for his sins," I concluded. I looked down at Porky. His corpse gurgled. "Make peace with whatever god or devil awaits your heart," I said as I extinguished the cigarette on his forehead. I turned to the ghost behind me. He stared back with a vapid, placated look that all men get when they realize just how good a blowjob can be. I reached around his fat arms, grabbed his cigarettes and Zippo lighter, then stepped out of the car. I then looked up at the one-lit room. I briefly considered taking Porky's gun, but I ultimately decided against it. The man waiting for me was going to present a danger far more serious than anything that could be solved with a pistol. You know the expression a grown man has when he shits his pants in public and has no place to change his underwear, even if he were in possession of a fresh pair? Probably not, but there's just no other way to describe how certain people look in the moment when I tell them about a ghost from the past that only I can see. The man before me had that exact delightful look as I told him about his dead mother standing next to us. He certainly seemed sharp enough to realize that she had probably been there for years, watching his every move. Each of us, everyone, has spirits from the past that haunt us every second of every day. Life is ideally a process of learning to ignore their presence at a faster rate than they accumulate. A thick glob of red mush fell from the hole in the ghost's hat. It landed on the ground with a splorch. She shuffled in place, still unable to balance perfectly, and squashed the cranial coop with her shoe. What do you say when a woman with most of her brain blown out staggers into a room to confront the son who killed her? How would you process the emotional baggage reawakened in a man who is suddenly forced to face the most painful anguish that he's buried in the deepest part of his soul? "Here," I offered, pulling one of those two lit cigarettes from my mouth. "We'll need to swap poisons if we're going to deal with the sheer quantity of gorilla shit this night has in store for us." I shoved the cancer stick between his lips and grabbed the bottle of whiskey that had been sitting in front of him. I inhaled sweet nicotine from the remaining cigarette, chugged a healthy dose straight from the bottle, then blew out the delightful billow of smoke that had been waiting patiently in my lungs. It really was quite lovely. "So," Agent asked. I continued keeping the cigarette pinched tightly between my lips as I spoke. "You know that I can see ghosts, and I know that you killed your mom. It's a more intimate acquaintanceship than I prefer with the first 60 seconds of meeting because I've become more reserved since passing the half-century mark." I closed my eyes and took another deep drag. "But intentionally or not, we end up fucking every person we know, so let's get past the awkward foreplay. You want to talk to your mom?" He was sheet white and frozen in place. He finally blinked, looked down in shock at the cigarette that I had stuffed into his mouth, then pulled it out and crushed it into his empty whiskey glass. The man stared at me in wide-eyed horror. "You can talk to my mom." Tears shined in his pupils, and I looked away. "Yep, He swallowed. And she can talk to you? I nodded. I'd nearly bitten the filter off the cigarette before realizing how tightly I was clenching my jaw. S closed his eyes and heaved deeply. Does she? He whispered. I can't hear you unless you speak up, I responded lightly. He wiped both lids and then stopped himself, now on the edge of hyperventilation. Agent S opened his eyes. Does she forgive me? I then turned to the woman, and he stared fixedly at me, and she stared fixedly at him. He was silent, and she spoke, and I listened, and I sighed. I pulled the cigarette out, rested it between my fingers, and folded my arms. Everyone over the age of 10 wants to find closure by looking backwards, and the irony never sinks in. That's why ghosts hire me to kill people. It's very forward thinking for them. She says she loves you. And, he snapped back immediately, failing to conceal his hand tremors. I looked at the empty space next to me, marked only by a bloody shoe print. And then she walked away after that. He stood up with a jolt. Well, did she hear my question? He shrieked in a near panic. I stared squarely at him. Agent S., the ghosts of our past hear everything we do, but change nothing without our help. Did you really need me to tell you that? He locked eye contact with me, the tears no longer hidden, and said nothing. We stood like that for several moments. I was the one to blink and look away, finally. Well, I remarked, clearing my throat. You brought me here to offer me a job or to kill me, or something that's perfect for breaking this awkward tension. So let's move on to something less uncomfortable, please. I breathed in a final puff of the cigarette before popping it out of my mouth and crushing it against the rancid motel wall. His jaw quivered as he stared at me like I had a dick growing out of my forehead. Well, that's it? That's the end of the conversation with my mom? I pulled out the Zippo with the imbalanced scale logo and extracted another cigarette. I'd expected to find 19 cigarettes remaining, but was down to 13. I really had to get my subconscious smoking into check. If you're expressing shock at the fact that there's no real peace to be found, then you're an idiot. The only ones at peace are ghosts, and that's because they've finally given up hope. I breathed the smoke in deeply. That's it. End the story. Live with it. Now get over yourself and tell me why I'm here. He walked towards the door, and just for a second, I imagined what it would be like if he'd been sent as a carnal token of bargaining. I didn't actually think that he was, but a girl's unspoken lustful thoughts are more than most men can handle. So it's fun to picture the scenarios. I dismissed the thought quickly. He was a delicious piece of eye candy, to be sure, but the really rugged ones don't work as hard when you've got them on all fours. He probably couldn't even hold his breath for more than 30 seconds. And so where's the fun in that? I followed him out of the room. A periwinkle strip had formed across the eastern sky, and the first birds were chirping life into a new day of regrets at the Stardust Motel. The only other person outside was a man leaning creepily against the adjacent door. That room's window was open, and I could hear a little boy's voice drifting from within. Mom, I wish you wouldn't hide things from me. I wish that you wouldn't lie to yourself about why we're always running away. Nope, not today. Not my monkeys and not my circus. I turned toward the dazed Agent S as he headed up the stairs, leading to the roof of the second-story building. The air was cool and fresh at the top. Just enough sunlight had emerged to illuminate most of the space in front of me. Well, I asked him, who still looked like he was the one who had seen a ghost. Instead of speaking, he simply pointed to the far corner of the roof, just far enough into the lingering nighttime shadow to darken the truth. I squeezed the whiskey bottle tightly in my hand, focusing on the glass so I didn't subconsciously shred my box of cigarettes. Heart racing, I walked tentatively towards the edge. At first, I saw nothing. The outline of a person quickly formed as I approached. My breath caught in my throat, but my legs kept moving forward. The outline solidified and took on a clear form. It was short, feminine, apprehensive,
and watching me. I closed within 20 feet, then 15, and finally 10. I stopped 5 feet away as understanding overwhelmed me. Nausea threatened to bring me to my knees. Her face had been too obscured until that moment. There had been no way to see her in the pitch of the night until she was directly in front of me, gray frizzy hair standing wildly in every direction, hands clenched at her sides in the perfect image of pain incarnate. I forced myself to balance while holding back the vomit. I took 3 shallow breaths before spitting the cigarette to the ground at her feet. "You bitch," I growled, making no attempt to hide my hatred. "I've been waiting 30 fucking years to find the woman who killed William." It's impossible to find the car's horn fast enough in that panic moment when some bag of dicks nearly runs you off the road. The same is true when you've been waiting 3 decades to cut the bitch who killed your only child. I tried to react all at once and couldn't figure out what to do. I had a lighter and a cigarette box in one hand, a mostly empty whiskey bottle in the other, and a pair of panties in the mightiest of twists up my ass. I wanted to punch her, turn around to berate Agent S for bringing the woman to me, and bite her face off all at once. But instead, I did nothing. My arms and legs were locked in place, bound with invisible bonds that felt tighter than a duck's waterproof asshole. I glared at the woman in front of me. "I see you can still control objects with your mind. You could have at least trapped me when a cigarette was in my mouth." My left hand suddenly sprung loose. Awkwardly, I pried a smoke free and grabbed it with my mouth. Then I put the box in my pocket and flicked the lighter. There are times when I'm not aware of the stress inside me until the first rush of nicotine clears it out. It's like a tension enema that cleans my whole body instead of just the deck. "You've met Harris, sir, once before," came the voice of Agent S behind me. He was still rattled from seeing his dead mother. That much was obvious just from listening to him. But he was clearly used to killing his own emotions in order to fulfill his obligations. S then stepped up behind me. I couldn't turn around, but his chocolatey voice was powerful against my ear. "Your brother wants you and Hasira to settle the past." I sucked deeply from the cigarette. My left hand was frozen at my waist once more, but it was actually kind of nice to be free of the societal obligation to remove the cancer stick at periodic intervals. "I thought I requested that you tell Alistar to go fuck himself," I shot back. "God knows he's got enough money to find a way to make that physically possible." "Your brother asked this man to bring us together," she interrupted. My glands nearly burst as anger incarnate raced through my veins. "I have forgiven Mr. Delora for what he did to me," she wiped away a tear. "It was the greatest gift I ever gave myself. I am finally free from a lifetime of anger." "Miss Barnes," Agent S whispered with an undercurrent of panic, "your brother is in a crisis moment, and he needs his sister more than he ever has. He has sent this woman as a test. If she lets you go, will you overcome yourself and forgive her?" Hasira sobbed. "Please don't make her answer." The world spun, and I suddenly found myself free of the invisible bonds that held me in place. Hasira had let me go. She closed her eyes and took a deep breath. "I want you to know, I need you to know that I am sorry for killing your son." I felt entitled to an anger that destroyed innocent people, because I was destroyed when I was innocent. Her voice trembled. "Your brother took everything from me, so I wanted to make him hurt in the same way." Tears were flowing freely down her wrinkled face, but sharing the hurt just made it stronger. I thought there was nothing left of me, that I was just an empty shell waiting to die. She wiped her eye with her wrist, but continued determinedly on. "But then he found me, and he asked for forgiveness. Because I had nothing left to lose, I gave it to him. It was the greatest moment of my life, and as a sign of healing to the woman I hurt, I wanted to bring that gift to you. I know you've been in pain. So think of how you felt when I released you from those physical bonds. I did so freely, with nothing but faith and goodwill. That is the feeling of forgiveness." That piece is my gift to you. She then opened her arms and smiled. I stumbled towards her, dazed. I didn't even realize that I was crying until the drops slid off my cheeks and dampened the top of my blouse. The sun was cresting over the horizon, and I felt the warmth of a humid Alabama daybreak sink deeply into my skin. And suddenly, I was hugging my child's killer. She ugly cried then. Deep heaving sobs shook her body as she held me close and buried her face in my shoulder. Her wild hair tickled my nose. I leaned down to whisper into her ear. They say that forgiveness is divine, I said in a tremulous voice. She wailed and hugged me tighter. I pulled in a deep drag from the cigarette and closed my eyes. But I'm very, very human, I growled, and things happened quickly. My body was yanked back like a fish on a line, but I had the advantage of surprise. I used the momentum to swing the whiskey bottle around and crack it against her skull. It exploded in a burst of shards, leaving a broken bottleneck in my hand. I halted in midair, 2 feet from Hasira and 2 inches above the ground. She stared back at me with anger that I knew had never gone away. I couldn't shake free of her psychic grip, but it didn't seem to be getting any stronger. My blow to her head must have momentarily diminished her control, but not eliminated it. I spat the cigarette out. It takes a special kind of stupid to think that a woman who sees ghosts every fucking day would believe that the past can disappear. Blood was pouring from her temple, but she was too disoriented from the wound to even realize it. I looked down at her in purified hatred. But William hasn't visited me once since you killed him. The tears were flowing unabated now, and I made no attempt to stop them. So you want earthly peace? I then swung the shattered bottleneck across her throat. It ripped open like a steamed dumpling, spraying blood freely into the air. Rest in peace, bitch. I fell to the ground as her control over me abruptly ceased. People think that death is a clean transformation, but that's rarely the case. We come into this world as a screaming, bloody mess. An obstetrician will tell you that it's often a shitty, pissy event that would be embarrassing if it weren't for the huge distraction of unending pain. We usually go out the same way. I stared at her until she was done twitching. I was the last thing she saw on her. She didn't die with forgiveness on her mind, or peace for that matter. No, she died completely pissed off that I had gotten the better of her in the end, and only vaguely aware that she had shit her pants. Your brother was wrong about you. Agentess offered softly from behind me. I knew you'd pass the test. I turned slowly to face him. Oh, he wanted to kill her himself? It took over 30 years to track her down. Agentess offered a sad smile. But I convinced him that you'd prove yourself, and now he owes me, a 30-year single mom. I wiped away the tears that were still flowing. He wanted revenge as much as I did. That's true, S responded quietly. But there are some things he wants even more, and he understands better than anyone how to get it. The tears wouldn't stop, so I turned away from his face to the sunrise. What does that bastard need from me? Agent S knew that he could comfort me most by giving me space in this moment. He was good. There was probably a shit ton of women and maybe some men who had realized too late that he was not the answer to the problems. He then chose his words carefully. He doesn't do the things that you once frowned upon. Not anymore. Something changed. Well, everything changed. He's facing some people he doesn't know how to beat. I turned tentatively to face him. I thought I would like the idea of Alistar being knocked down a peg. Instead, it chilled me. I didn't think that my brother had ever been bested. As could tell, I was shaken. He used that fact to his advantage. This is about you and your brother. And it's about more than the two of you at the same time. He finally stepped around me, standing in between me and the sun. So many people think they know the difference between right and wrong, Miss Barnes. It's so easy for a man eating a steak to explain that a cow can't understand morality. And when I dissolve this woman's body in liters of sulfuric acid, It will feel much less evil than it did the first time. He then looked up at me. A clean conscience is usually the sign of a bad memory, and I don't feel guilty about stealing that quote. I turned away and pulled the box of cigarettes from my pocket. I stared at the lighter for a moment before igniting the flame. S knew I was waiting for him to say more. You see the past get up and walk around you every day, Miss Barnes, and I don't envy the fact that you have to live with a curse that no one understands. It's natural to hate our demons, but very unnatural to succeed in slaying them. And your brother is facing a very, very unnatural situation. He approached me and gently laid his hands on my left forearm. He was strong and soft at the same time. Slowly, he pulled back the long sleeve of my blouse. He stopped when he saw the tattoo. Two overlaid scales, each offset on a different side, created an X where the two bars crossed in the middle. The ink was old but clear. His next sentence could be described in the same way. Miss Barnes, you need to come home to balance the crooked scales. There are demons that can be slayed, but he can't do it alone. He then squeezed my arm gently, but firmly. I pulled the cigarette out of my mouth and blew a stream of smoke into his face. He didn't flinch, which meant that he thought I had a lot to offer. My brother thinks I can slay his demons? I asked skeptically. Agent S took a deep, measured breath, then focused his gaze intently on me. No, he doesn't. But he thinks you can bring a message from the parents of a man who can slay demons. If this man is convinced in the same way that Mr. DeLora once persuaded his parents long ago. I narrowed my eyes at him as I brought the cigarette resolutely back to my mouth. His name, S offered nervously, is Peter.